It's just a,
it's just not as fun. So
this is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the arguments in part. No, we fought an entire goddamn war. States' right to do what?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts.
You're listening to the Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. It's Tuesday, September 20th, and on today's show, we'll have news on the Palestinians' bid at the UN General Assembly, and how the U.S. and Israel's reacting, and how the Palestinians are also divided on the bid. Then, I sit down and talk to Farah Diba with Razia Ahmed. Farah Diba is a young woman in Pakistan who has started the Alam Bibi Educational Welfare Organization, helping children in the Lahore area with their schooling, education, critical thinking, and how to be a better person. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal and prepare to be radicalized. FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. Recently, the Palestinian Authority has announced that they'll submit its United Nations membership near the end of this month, putting Palestinian statehood to a vote, and requesting to be a full member at the 66th UN General Assembly. Acting PA Chief Mohammed Abbas called for the Palestinian bid.
We, just like any other people in the world, will have freedom and independence in a Palestinian state. A Palestinian state based on the borders of the 4th of June 1967, with East Jerusalem al-Quds as its capital. We will continue until we not only reach a solution, but also get that solution implemented. And one of the issues that must be resolved is the issue of refugees.
PA leadership has turned down direct negotiations with the Israeli government, saying that the Israeli Prime Minister is no partner in peace. Secretary General of the UN General Assembly, Ban Ki-moon, is worried about this bid.
My only wish and hope is that we'll not see any confrontational atmosphere in the General Assembly over this issue. As a committed proponent of a two-state solution, that is my wish, and I fully support that vision. The realization of this vision has been long overdue.
Do you think the Palestinians' actions have helped bring the issue of Palestinian statehood back to the forefront, or are they proving to be a hindrance to these negotiations?
It's true that this has come to the height, attention of international community. It is only natural that after such a long time that Palestinian people have been frustrated and trying to reach some of their goals. But my only wish is that if both parties could engage in further meaningful dialogue.
The pursuit in the UN bid has angered Israeli and U.S. officials to where the U.S. will use its veto power to shoot down the Palestinians' UN bid. At a White House press briefing, James S. Brady says that the U.S. feels that the actions of the PA will not achieve statehood.
But we've been very clear about the fact that the only realistic path for the Palestinians to realize their aspirations is through direct negotiations. A unilateral effort, Palestinian effort, to achieve statehood at the UN would be counterproductive. Even if these actions are well-intentioned, they will not achieve statehood. And for that reason, we continue to make clear that we oppose it, and we continue to make clear that we believe that both sides need to return to direct negotiations. That is the only path to the kind of solution that the Palestinians rightfully want, and that the Israelis rightfully want. You have to do it through direct negotiations. You won't get it through the UN.
Other problems concerning the bid is that this would move Palestinians away from self-determination, human fundamental rights, and instead just give them a state with no sovereignty, something that political analysts feel will happen if there's a successful bid at the UN.
Come as a shock to anyone in this room.
This is State Department spokesperson Victoria Nuland.
It should not come as a shock to anyone in this room that the U.S. opposes a move in New York by the Palestinians to try to establish a state that can only be achieved through negotiations. So yes, if something comes to a vote in the UN Security Council, the U.S. will veto.
Hamas and Islamic resistant movements have stated that they're against this bid, that it would bring the Palestinians to the failed attempt of negotiating with the Zionists.
Hamas movement says Abbas's decision to seek statehood at the United Nations was taken unilaterally away from the national Palestinian consensus. The Islamic resistance movement added that it came in the context of insistence on the path of negotiations away from the choice of resistance.
He wants to return to the negotiations and unilaterally control the core issues of the Palestinian people, like statehood and the refugees' right of return.
The Islamic Jihad movement chided Abbas's speech and described his statehood bid as a tactical move to return to negotiations with Israel and to the failed Oslo Accord.
We hold Mahmoud Abbas fully responsible for this unilateral step that he is taking without Palestinian consensus. His bid at the UN is nothing but an attempt to revive negotiations with the Zionists.
Also, the State Department spokesperson, Victoria Nuland, reiterated this, and also that the United States would use its veto power if the Palestinians would search for a UN bid.
And I think it is important also for us to understand that, you know, even the bid that the Palestinian Authority is planning to take to the United Nations, it actually represents the antithesis of the concept of self-determination for the Palestinian people. This bid does not actually, defend the right of return of more than 7 million Palestinian refugees scattered all over the world living in miserable conditions in refugee camps. Neither does it actually represent the cultural and national rights of more than 1.2 million second-class citizens of the state of Israel.
So if the Palestinians would go to the Security Council, it would be blocked by the U.S. with its veto power. Now at the General Assembly, Palestinians have more of a chance to be accepted, with most of the international world recognizing them and their right to statehood. This would mean an upgrading to join several international organizations and be able to use certain human rights treaties, which then could be used against Israel in violation of provisions covered by those treaties. It is also likely that the unelected representatives of the Palestinian Authority would be seated in the General Assembly instead of the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, which currently holds the Palestine Observer seat at the UN. But the PLO is the legal body that represents all Palestinians, and the PA only represents its citizens, residents of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. This excludes pretty much everyone else in the historic sense of Palestine. But ultimately, the U.S. would still blackmail the Palestinians by withdrawing its financiers and political sponsors. So the bid will basically show the falsehoods and illusion of the peace process, which has been nothing but a charade put on by the U.S. and Israel. The settler movement that started in the late 19th century and heightened during the 1948 Nakba, where Palestinians were ethnically cleansed from their land, has now made up half the population, which controls the Palestinians with racist and colonial laws that are nothing more than apartheid. So the ideology that lives through this system that has been implanted in Israel is still there. Even after the UN bid, it will still be there. The state-sponsored terrorism on the Palestinians will still remain, and a normal life for the Palestinians will be non-existent. So it is more important to boycott Israel through the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction, BDS movement, until they have accepted the ending of Israel's occupation and colonization of all Arab lands that were occupied in 1967, honoring the right of Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality by ending the Israeli system of legalized and institutionalized racial discrimination, and respecting and enabling the implementation of the UN-sanctioned right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and lands from which they were expelled. But in the end, the U.S. will back Israel, and Israel will still receive military and weapons and economical help, and this will still empower the Israeli government to oppress the Palestinians, and the apartheid will continue. في كرسي أزرق بده يسافر بده يحلق وبده يطير أزرق غامق هيدا لونه بالأبيض رسمه فلسطين في كرسي أزرق بده يسافر بده يحلق وبده يطير أزرق غامق هيدا لونه بالأبيض رسمه فلسطين هيدا الكرسي مش أي كرسي هيدا الكرسي مش أي كرسي هيدا الكرسي من نوع جديد في كرسي أزرق أيوه عم يطلع في كرسي أزرق ممكن يصير كرسي رح يعطينا دولة هيدا الكرسي وضعه خطير في كرسي أزرق بده يسافر بده يحلق وبده يطير أزرق غامق هيدا لونه بالأبيض رسم فلسطين هيدا الكرسي مش أي كرسي هيدا الكرسي مش أي كرسي هيدا الكرسي من نوع جديد في كرسي أزرق كرسي للاجئين كرسي رح بيحقق عودي كرسي رح بيجيب القدس ورح بيرجع فلسطين Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM Puria's one and only Pacifica Radio Affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. As some of the listeners may remember, not too long ago I sat down with Razia Ahmed, who had gone to Pakistan and was there helping with the flood victims, among other things. And along her way, she came upon a woman named Farah Diba in the suburb of Lahore. And she found out that this woman, very young woman, was helping these children in the area with the Alam Bibi Education Fund, basically starting a school there, which grew from 50 to, I believe, 500 students. And Farah Diba came from a well-educated family and had actually graduated from college, had earned her law degree, and was going to pursue becoming a lawyer, go up the corporate ladder, but instead helped out this community that was very deprived. So she started the Alam Bibi Welfare Educational Organization, named after her grandmother, and that was back in 2005. So Razia met this woman and came back to the States, and we sat down and talked on Solidarity Journal. And not too long after that interview, I had the chance of actually sitting down with Farah Diba in Pakistan, where she basically started talking about what is going on there in Lahore, what the education system's like there, and what's still needed to help not only the children, but the adults, the parents in that area. So Razia and I started the conversation off with what was going on, or what is going on right now in Pakistan with education.
Actually, people think that there is a problem of literacy. We have illiterate person in our country, but I don't believe on it. I think literacy is not a big issue here in Pakistan. Our issue is a civilization. We are not producing civilized human being. If a person don't have any etiquettes, manners, civilization, humanity, and he is well educated, what's the output of that person? No output. We need a person who are a good human being with some civilizational attitudes. So basically in our institute, I'm working on the kids who are really very poor, but I would love to have them as a very good human beings. When they will be good human being, they will be good for the country. They will be good citizens. They will be good for their surrounding. They will be good for their family. Everyone who will interact with those kids after that, they will be very comfortable, because we need the persons who has some features of a human being. Because I believe biologically existence of a person is not, we can't call him a human being. To be a human being, good human being, you should have some features, some characteristics. And in our institute, I'm trying to develop those characteristics in our kids so that they can be a good human being. If they will be good human being, they will be good in their religion, they will be good for their country, they will be good for their family. With education, I'll put in my effort for their personality grooming to develop features of a good human being, characteristics of a good human being, which is, I think, very important.
Mm-hmm. And the children there, are they, what is their upbringing like that makes it difficult for them to receive the type of education you're trying to provide?
It's difficult because the environment of their homes is really out of question, because the father is addict one, mother goes in factories to work as a laborer, and there's no environment of learning, even of any level of learning. They don't have anything. The kids just roaming here and there and learn many many things which are not good for them, like some sort of minor crimes, street crimes like this, are sometimes the parents send them for labor, child labor, and they don't learn anything. But when we go for their grooming and we ask, please send your kids in our school, they think it's not good for them because education will not give them anything. But if they will go to a workshop, they will earn something, 50 rupees, 100 rupees, or something else. But when I counsel with them that if they will send their kid, they will be a very good human being. I'll not teach them only for metric level. They can go in colleges, universities. They can be a doctor, engineer, lawyer, bureaucrat, anyone. And with that kid, you can develop your whole family. When I talk about such things, they try to understand. And then they start to cooperate with me. Then they send the kids in our institute. But with the passage of time, I'll make some conference, some counseling meetings with their parents to convey them what the kid is doing now and the status of the kid and many other things. And I try to groom the parents also, because if the parents will be groomed and they will understand what I want to do, then they will cooperate with me. And when they will cooperate, then I'll be able to do something. Because if they will send their kids in our institute, then I'll do some efforts on them. But if they will send them on workshops and or in factories or any other place where they can go for child labor, then how I can do work on them? So there is a main problem to convince the parents to make some level of understanding of the parents that they send the kids in our institute.
It's not just the question of making them understand, it's a question of their living, livelihood. The children are helping them earn their food And I remember talking to a garbage collector who had his grandson with him, who was like 8 or 9, and I asked him, why wouldn't he send him to school? And he told me about his son who got high school, even 2 years of college, and he can't get a job. So education doesn't mean anything to them as long as they are hungry and they don't
Very
have...
True. Important thing is this, if we understand that education means some sort of job, we have related education with the economy. Education, I believe, it should be related with the economy, but education in real sense means the creator, good human being, which really guides you in your life, which makes you a human being, which groom you. Education doesn't mean you'll get some degree for your job, for your economy. Is it true? It's good that if you get some good degree and you go for job and you earn through your degree. But important thing is this, your education make you a good human being.
Well,
we never see such things.
You yourself said they have to have food in their tummies before they can...
I'll give you the answer of this. If they learn something from any institute, I'm not talking about my institute, metric or intermediate, if they get job, it's good. If they don't get, they will go for some skill work. Means like, as we have now vocational center, also for boys who get their education from our institute, and after matric, if they don't get anything, or if they don't go for college or university, they can get any skill from our vocational institute. And through that skill, they can earn a good livelihood for the family and also for themselves. So if you will get education, and after that you will get any, you will learn any skill, or you will go for any job, you will be a better person rather than that who hasn't get anything or who has never get through education and he is doing work. To learn is the basic right of everyone. To learn doesn't mean you'll go for a very high fi job. To learn means you should know the basic things. After that, if you go for workshop work, for any type of work other than job, you will do that with honesty. If no one has told you what is honesty, if no one has trained you for honesty, how you will be honest? At least the very poor class with whom I'm dealing, I train them for honesty. And I try to penetrate this concept in their inner self that if you will be honest, anything you have will be enough for you. You are doing a good job. You are doing a salesman. You are doing. You are going for garbage. You are going for workshop. If you are honest, you will get the things which are your necessity in life. If you're not honest, you earn lots of money that will not fulfill your necessities.
What has from what I read from Razia is the community is kind of. More and more have built a trust, a relationship between you and them. Is that correct?
Yeah, in start really it was, they were saying that they will not send the kids because people come and make some photos and they just disappeared. No one come back. And they will not trust on this thing that if I'm saying that the kids of their kids will get their basic education and we will train them and we will also provide everything free of cost, they don't believe. And then they said that some people come and do these things only for a few days or a few months and then they go back. So it was really difficult, but consistency of our work shows this and prove this that we are not like that. We will make photos are like this. We are doing some things for their kids only for this thing that they are human beings and we should put some good things for those. So now there is a trust level between our work and their parents of the kids. Community also trust on us. Now it's good relation. They are supporting us. They are they are very cooperative because they send their kids daily. There is 99.99% present ratio in our school, which is quite impossible. When someone come and visit, the comment always make a comment that how it can be 99.99% people are in school, kids are in school, and these are the kids who belong to a very poor class. There is no education, no training. How parents send them daily? So it's a big cooperation from the parent side that they send their kids daily, and they come time to time and ask me about the performance of their kids. And so they are really, you know, conscious about the performance of the kids. And now they have developed some dreams that their kid will be a doctor or engineer like this. And they pray for us that we can continue this work, we can improve our work so that the many other kids who are waiting to be in the school can get their education. And the one more important thing, now the, when people visit me, they said that they are learning some things from their kids. When kids go back in their homes, they also learn their parents and other family members. They also learn their cousins about etiquettes, manners, how they have to take their food, how they have to look after the other ones. Means everything which we train them, they train their parents, their cousins, their neighbors. And now they are developing a really good relationship because our kids are our marketing. Because now they are good. They speak Urdu, and sometimes they are now improving in their English language or etiquettes, manners. They know how to cross the road, and they also learn the other ones in that poor community that how you can cross the road, civic sense. So when the parents, other people come and visit me, they said that you are really working hard on these kids because now they are changed. They're different personalities.
In regard to the schools in Pakistan, and probably I know this one in particular, the government doesn't fund a lot of the schools. Is it a lot of local businesses that do the funding, or how does that work?
For funding, there are some private individuals who have visited the place, and they feel that this is the place where they should donate. And because of their donation and because of their support, I am working. There is no support from government side. Even I have tried many times, and still I'm trying, because my responsibility is to put my effort. What is the result? That's not on my end.
Okay. Farah, I know there are government schools all over. The government does provide free education up to high school, doesn't it? There are government schools around. I do not know if there's government school where you are.
In my locality, there is no government school.
And Mike, to answer your question, yes, the government does provide free education in schools, but people somehow got, not incorrectly, but this impression that government schools are not good. But a lot of times government schools don't have enough teachers, and the buildings are dilapidated, and nobody is taking care of those. And instead of the community coming together and helping improve the government schools, they send their children to private schools, which are basically open, with a few exceptions like Faraz, and there are a few others. They are in it only for the money. So they make money, and they teach the kids to memorize things, and they go to higher, you know, get higher grades. The education system leaves a lot to be desired there.
Okay, I have also some angle of this thing that in Pakistan, the good government schools which are really producing good students are very few. And those schools are not situated in such poor communities. That's where these poor people can't get approach of those schools. If they have to go in those schools, they have to pay some fair time, and there are many other issues. So there are very few schools, and very few persons get approached in those schools. Remaining are mostly status conscious people. They think that if they will send their kids in private school, what other people will say, that my kid is going in government school. It's not good. They send their kids in private schools only for status, because they want to make sustain this. And such poor community can't go in private schools, and got a few good government schools are not situated in such communities. Government has a very, you can say, very poor level of schools have in such communities. And in our community, I don't have any such government school. It is, but it's very far away from us. And I have visited that school. It's really poor. Management is not doing a good work. Teacher come with their own choice. No timings of school, kids are playing here and there, and nobody is giving them attention. And if someone is giving attention, they're only working on their academic a little bit. Nobody's worried about their personality grooming, their training. If you are producing only a person with education, it means you are creating a problem in your society. People don't know what is the meaning of education, how they have to be in a country. What is a citizenship? What is the meaning of a person? Then what is the benefit of this education?
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, even they don't educate, they don't care. There's no oversight in the government schools.
I have told you that a little bit academic attention. Otherwise, there is nothing. I have visited many schools. Teachers are enjoying, and the kids are also enjoying, because those kids belong to a poor family, a primary class, and they are not worried about their education. Nobody's at home who will ask what you have learned today and what is the performance of the kid. Nobody asks. So it's really a poor condition in government schools, and the few good government schools don't have any concern about these kids. They just have few students from the better communities, just like Central Model, like the other schools. That's why here is education is a commercial business. Everyone is going for this business, and now education is a business.
So what would be the outcome, do you think, if schools in Pakistan just follow a strict top-down business type model where the kids are just learning, memorizing?
It's a bit harsh comment, but I'll make it because I want this. Education is a commercial business. Everyone is going to earn money through this. But what will be the condition of the country? But not only education. Religion is also available in the shops. People are selling the religion for the sake of money. Big mosques are the wholesale shops of the religion. And the small mosques are the retail shops of the religion. Where religion is in this lethargic and poor condition, then what we can talk about education? And I think there is a problem of education. If the people get their proper education, learning, training, mind-making, thought process, they will be able to understand their religion. People are just getting their education, and our ulama, our mullah, giving them the image of the religion with their own choice. And people consider and think that this is the religion, because they don't have understanding level to understand whether this person is saying me right or wrong. They don't have understanding level. That's why their image and picture of religion, which is depicting in front of them, they just own that. They don't have understanding level, and they don't have a time to make some research whether it is right or wrong. So in our country, the people are earning their money in the name of religion, because they know our public is really stupid, which don't have a time and don't have understanding. What we will say, they will own that. They will admit that.
So, well, I think that the people who are teaching the religion are themselves not educated. They do not know well enough to be teaching.
This is dishonesty. They are just making money. They have made this a way of income generation.
What can people here in Peoria and the United States do to help? Obviously donate, but to get a better understanding of what you're doing, like to apply it into their own schools and to their own ways of life.
I'll say that everyone has the capacity to do something better for others. Need is this. We should realize this. We should make an intention to do this. And then ways, sources, things come on our way. We just need to make a commitment with ourselves that we will think about others. I'll think about any other one who really needs my support, my care, my attention. When we will think and make a commitment with ourselves, there will be many ways to help out the others. And when we will go for this thing, we will get internal satisfaction. We will get what we never have. Peace will be in our inner self. And to live for others, to work for others, to think about others is the biggest thing in our lives on the earth. And in our institute, I'm just working on the kids who are from any religion, any place, any country, any place, who are living below the standard of life and don't have their basic necessities like food, health, education. I'm providing these things so that they can live their lives. They can feel this blessing. What is life? Anyone who want to help out others who are really deserving, and their help will reach the ultimate deserving user, can come and join hands with us so that we can help these kids. We can also help those kids who are living in other parts of the country, in other parts of the world, and they need our help. I am alone can do, but not much. And but others who want to do something, when will be with me, we can do much better, much better. And we can do. We have ability, we have capacity. Just need us to think about others and make a commitment with ourselves. There will be many ways. And I have experienced it personally.
Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate.
I'd like to thank Razia Ahmed for interviewing Farah Diba with me. If you'd like to hear our past shows, just go to radioforall.net and type in Solidarity Journal. And if you want to hear future programming, always tune in on Tuesdays at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. So until next time, keep up the resistance.